Hello, my name is Marlene, and I'd like to welcome you to Vegan Nation. You're tuned in to WCUW 91.3 FM, Worcester Community Radio, serving Central Massachusetts and worldwide at WCUW.org.
Vegan Nation is sponsored in part by St. Croix Beach Massage, advocating social justice for all living creatures. Massage on the beach, at your rental villa, or at the historic Club Comanche Hotel St. Croix, because your tropical vacation should be filled with relaxation. Online at massagestcroix.com.
The views in this program do not necessarily reflect the views of this station nor its management. Welcome to Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. Vegan Nation is an informational program about living the vegan lifestyle, featuring interviews with individuals and organizations who are practicing a healthy vegan lifestyle. In this program, we're featuring a vegan veterinarian and professor, Andrew Knight. He is the professor of animal welfare and ethics and founding director of the Center for Animal Welfare at the University of Winchester in the United Kingdom. Professor Knight is also a veterinary specialist in animal welfare science, ethics, and law, a fellow of the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons, and a senior fellow of the UK Higher Education Academy. Professor Knight has over 65 academic publications and a series of YouTube videos on animal issues. In addition to discussing animal ethics in higher education and the use of animals in research, we'll also be discussing the vegan diets for cat and dogs. This is part one of a two-part series. Thank you for joining us on Vegan Nation. We are very fortunate to be joined by Professor Andrew Knight. Professor Knight is joining us via Skype in Berlin, Germany. He will be hearing about his activities in Berlin, and he is from Winchester in the United Kingdom. Thank you, Professor Knight, for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Good to be here. Hello.
This is a great honor. You are so amazing. All your work all these years is very powerful, very compassionate, and very intelligent.
Thank you very much. I think I am originally from Australia, and we are supposed to spend a lot of our time lying on beaches, and sadly I have not done enough of the traditional Australian thing and had a bit of a mismatch in work-life balance, and accordingly I have been very busy and I have published a lot of work in this field.
Yes, I'm looking forward to hearing about some of the over 65 academic publications that you have, as well as the book you've written. And I'd like to start first with hearing about your work as a professor of animal welfare and ethics at the University of Winchester.
Sure. I was asked to come to the university in 2015 to set up a new Center for Animal Welfare, which was very exciting because there aren't too many of these around the world. And the one at Winchester, we were hoping it would be particularly radical in terms of being willing to seriously consider many contemporary uses of animals throughout society and critique those where it seemed appropriate to do so. And in this sense, I think that we go beyond many other universities that do have similar centres. And I think the reason for that is because we don't receive large amounts of funding from animal use industries. So by criticising the use of animals in various industries, we're not at risk of offending any funders that we might be reliant on. And I think in this way we're different from many of the other centres around the world. So we're actually, I think, world-leading in terms of our ability to speak out on behalf of animals academically. And we're continuing in the tradition of the University of Winchester in being a leading voice for a variety of social justice issues, whether it be climate change, human rights issues, and most recently animal welfare and advocacy as well. So delighted to be at Winchester, which is such a leading university for speaking out academically for a whole range of these sorts of social justice issues. So the thing that I'm most excited about at Winchester is actually the distance learning Master of Science in Animal Welfare, Science, Ethics and Law that I've established at the university. So it's a master's program that covers the full range of animal welfare issues and the latest and the best evidence about those animal welfare issues, and also a good smattering of animal law and animal behaviour and a bit of animal ethics too. And we're producing a small army of highly skilled, highly qualified animal advocates who, as well as being expert in the full range of animal welfare issues, are also developing the skills to be able to communicate those to society in a way that's persuasive and credible. So that's available via distance learning and part-time enrollment options, and we do have students in the US and indeed across the world. So if anyone is interested in gaining specialised knowledge about the full range of animal welfare issues and a master's qualification in this area, they can look at the program at the University of Winchester website.
Wonderful. Thank you very much. And Professor Knight, how long have you been vegan?
I've been vegan so long I can barely remember, but I'll have a go. I think it's 25 years now.
Oh, you're a role model. Thank you, Professor Knight.
Thank you very much.
And I'd also like to hear about your work as founding director of the Center for Animal Welfare at the University of Winchester.
Yes, so when I came to the university hadn't previously been involved in this field of animal welfare. It had been primarily a humanities-based university without a strong background in the natural sciences, and I came in as a veterinary specialist in animal welfare. So what we've done, I've recruited other faculty to join me, and we've spent thousands and thousands of pounds adding to the university library holdings. We've now got a very substantial collection in animal welfare science, and the master's degree that we offer in animal welfare science and ethics and law is very science-based. We also have an undergraduate degree in animal welfare and society, which is likewise quite strongly science-based, although it includes a lot of humanities perspectives as well. So it was quite a task to bring the sciences to what had been traditionally a humanities-based university, and also include those perspectives from areas like animal ethics and philosophy and culture and history and religion and so on. And I think we've managed to do that very well now in the programs that we are offering to the students. And I think the popularity of those programs affirms that we've made the right choices.
That's wonderful to hear. In addition to our topic of discussing that we don't need to use animals, because in my opinion, animals and animals' flesh and secretions are not food, so that we can free the animals from slavery. But I would also like to discuss the other important aspect of the vegan movement, and that is abolishing the use of animals in research and medical, military, scientific experiments. And I know that you have written a book and have many articles about that. So can you please share some of your wisdom on that?
Sure. But essentially completed a PhD which looked at the use of animals in trying to contribute to human healthcare advancements and education, and also looked at the alternatives that were available. And essentially what I did was to conduct a number of systematic reviews, which is where you systematically survey the scientific evidence available in a particular field in order to shed light on a particular research question. This has come from the field of evidence-based medicine, where people want to really study evidence and find out whether a particular drug works in patients or not. So you can do the same sort of systematic evidence-collecting process for other research questions too. So I looked, and my co-authors looked at questions surrounding to what degree has invasive animal research contributed meaningfully to human healthcare advancements in a variety of specific fields of medicine. And what we found was that very often the claims of benefit have been greatly overstated. There were very few contributions that were very helpful to the development of clinical interventions, so drugs or other therapies with real potential to help human patients. So we did that. I also looked at the use of animals in education, particularly veterinary surgical training, other university education, high school biology classes and so on, and likewise reviewed the alternatives available to harmful animal use in this area as well. I ended up publishing a large number of academic papers and a book called The Costs and Benefits of Animal Experiments, and got a doctorate in that field in 2010. Which has led on to other work since that time. And I continue to stay active in this field at the moment, still publishing articles and book chapters and supervising a PhD student, speaking at various conferences on this issue. So I'm still quite active in this field. And of course, it is a field that's very controversial, attracts a lot of interest, because I think this is one of the very few areas of animal use across society where we deliberately inflict serious harm and suffering upon other sentient creatures. So it's very contentious to do that. And the only reason that is are condoned by society at large is because of the understanding that the suffering is minimized and the benefits are worth the cost to the animals. And unfortunately, when you review the evidence, you find out that the claims of benefit, unfortunately, are very often overstated.
Yes, and Professor Knight, what are some of the examples of the suffering?
Well, there's been a lot of research into, for example, cancer and trying to find cures for cancer, ostensibly. And so we've created many animal models of cancer, particularly mice, which have been genetically engineered to produce more cancers than they naturally would. And mice start off with quite a high rate of natural cancers anyway. So cancers in the body are growths of tumorous tissue, usually, and that can interfere with the animal's normal functioning and produce quite a lot of pain and debilitation before eventual death if the cancer is serious enough, as it often is. So those are research protocols that quite often result in a lot of suffering. Toxicity testing is another one where animals deliberately are fed toxins or exposed to toxins on their skin surfaces or forced to breathe them and so on in order to study the level of toxicity of various compounds. These can cause quite severe suffering as well. Signs such as vomiting, collapse, diarrhea, lethargy, ulceration of corneas on eyeballs, all these sorts of things can occur in toxicity tests, unfortunately. I find it very interesting, though, when so often researchers are required to estimate in advance the amount of impact that studies will cause to animals. And this is required by legislation in various parts of the world. And there are different bands which are available, sort of from no impact to low impact to moderate impact to severe impact. And very often the initial assessment is that there are only quite a small number of animals in the severe impact category, but researchers typically exclude procedures such as those causing death because it's considered that death is not a welfare problem, and I think that's very wrong. Or procedures causing genetic modification because somehow the idea that modifying the genome of an animal is not a highly invasive procedure seems to be normal thinking. So I actually think the numbers of animals in these most severe impact categories are very often underestimated. And when you actually include those sorts of things, you find that the proportion of animals in these categories in various countries seems to range in, based on the research that I've done, from about 25% to 40%. So really substantial numbers of animals being subjected to some very invasive procedures each year worldwide.
We're listening to Professor Andrew Knight, who is the founding director of the Center for Animal Welfare at the University of Winchester in the United Kingdom. This is Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. After the break, we'll continue our conversation with Professor Knight, and we'll be discussing how to safely veganize your cat and dog, and we'll also be discussing the impact of global animal agriculture on climate change.
Hi, this is Troy. You're listening to WCUW. Tune in on Fridays and hear the Jukebox of Americana, Fridays from 9 to 12 noon.
Hi, this is Mishkin Fitzgerald. You're listening to Vegan Nation on WCUW 91.3 FM, Community Radio, Worcester, Massachusetts. You can also listen online at wcuw.org.
Welcome back from the break. This is Vegan Nation. I'm your host, Marlene. We are joined by Professor Andrew Knight, a professor at the University of Winchester in the United Kingdom. He is a professor of animal welfare and ethics, and he is also the founding director of the Center for Animal Welfare at the University of Winchester. Thanks again, Professor Knight, for joining us on Vegan Nation.
Hi, Marlene. It's great to be here. Thank you.
I would love to hear about how to safely veganize your cat and dog. And I'm really happy that you wrote that article with that same title for the New Zealand Green for Life magazine this past winter.
Yes, well, this is an issue that is very interesting to very many people because the growth of interest in vegetarian and vegan diets for human beings is enormous. It's an issue that is exploding across Europe and also in New Zealand, where I've recently returned from, and I'm sure in other countries too. So Many of these people, of course, have cats and dogs at home and would be interested in maintaining them on vegan diets for the same sorts of reasons that they choose those diets for themselves, if they thought that it could be done safely. But they're concerned that it's natural to feed meat to cats and dogs, and the cats and dogs will become ill if they don't receive meat. So what I've done is I've sort of thoroughly examined the evidence in this field, and it confirms what you would expect based upon common sense, which is that cats and dogs and all other species do have requirements for specific sets of nutrients which vary with the different species, but there's no requirement for any particular ingredient. And of course, nutrients and ingredients are two different things. And if you can supply all the nutrients that a cat needs or a dog's needs based on vegetable, synthetic and mineral sources, then there's no particular requirement for these animals to eat meat. Now, if people are interested in transitioning their animals onto vegan diets, then they do need to ensure that the full range of nutrients is present. So it's important to purchase a commercially available vegan or vegetarian diet and check the labeling and make sure that there are claims that the diet is nutritionally complete for cats or dogs. Or if people are making a homemade diet, then they should be adding in a nutritional supplement to ensure the full range of nutrients is available. So that's one thing that people need to do. Another is to keep an eye on the acidity of the urine, actually, but that's a separate topic.
Thank you. And are there any brands that you could recommend to people for those who desire to purchase commercial brands, both here in the United States and also elsewhere?
Yes, well, I have a website where I list a whole bunch of suppliers just as a service to everyone. I don't receive any funding from this. So the website is veggiepets.info, VEGEpets.info. And if you click on the suppliers button, you'll find a long list of suppliers of these products in North America and other regions of the world. It's by no means complete, and this sector is really starting to take off, and there are more appearing all the time. So generally, I would encourage people to make sure that the supplier seems to be a reputable supplier, supplying good quality foods for these animals. Make sure there are claims that the diet is nutritionally complete and reasonably balanced for cats or dogs. If people are particularly interested, they could contact manufacturers and go further and encourage them to provide information about what steps they've taken to ensure their diet is nutritionally complete. The other thing that I do recommend is that people keep an eye upon the acidity of the urine, because when animals go onto vegan diets, the urine can become a little bit more alkaline, and this can cause crystals to start forming in urine, which can come together to form little stones and potentially block up the urinary tract, which can be very serious, most of all in male cats because they have the smallest tract. However, it's important in all of these animals, and so I do encourage people to try and check the acidity of the urine, and I will say how that can be done. But sort of initially, before any changes happen, weekly during any transition, and then probably once a month in the long term. The way to do that is to collect a small amount of urine using a foil baking tray when the dog urinates, or by using non-absorbent cat litter, which is white plastic beads in a cat litter tray, for a cat, confining the cat in a room with a cat litter tray until a urine sample is produced, essentially, and then just checking the acidity of the urine via a little litmus paper test strip, or a pH meter is even better. And those litmus test strips can be purchased from pet stores or obtained from veterinarians. The normal acidity of urine is pH 6 to 7.5, and if it is starting to become a little bit too alkaline, it's possible to add things into the diet to help correct that. And the sorts of things that can be added and the acidity is all on my website, veggiepets.info, if people are interested in looking at that.
Thank you very much. And I've heard from many people that they've had healthy cats and dogs on vegan diets, and very, very healthy, from kittens into up to the 20s, their age in the 20s, and also health improving. And on that note, can you talk about some of the ingredients that are included into the flesh-based cat and dog foods that are sold commercially?
Sure. So the commercial meat-based diets quite often have a range of dietary hazards in them. And they may be things like meat which is condemned as being unfit for human consumption, so meat from animals that are arriving at slaughterhouses, diseased, disabled, dying or dead, the 4D animals, which are not able to be processed into the human food chain, or the body parts from animals that are considered to be unfit for human consumption because their ligaments, sinews, tendons, other inedible body parts. So in order to extract a bit more money from all of these excess or waste body parts, they're often sidelined into the pet food industry. There are all of those. There are the styrofoam wrapped sort of supermarket meats, which go past their use-by date on the supermarket shelves, and some of those end up in the pet food supply chain as well, not necessarily with the plastic packaging removed because that increases labour costs. There are fish that go into pet foods. Fish, unfortunately, are particularly vulnerable to hazards such as heavy metal accumulation, such as mercury, polychlorinated biphenyls, PCBs, and other organic pollutants because they're attracted to the fatty tissues within fish, and fish have not evolved the mechanisms to excrete those out of their tissues because they haven't been in the environment with them for many thousands of years. So they tend to concentrate in the fish's tissues and then obviously end up in our dogs and cats as well. And fish are not meant to be out of water, so when they are pulled out of the water, their skin surfaces tend to degrade and become colonized by bacteria. Now, they're put into chilling tanks in the ships in order to minimize this, but that can only delay, not completely stop the process. And the supply chains are very long. The ships may be out at sea for days or weeks before the fish come in and are processed into pet food. So there's plenty of time for bacterial colonization to occur, and there have been some appalling surveys showing very high rates of bacterial colonization of fish that are intended for human consumption. And of course, the fish that are go into the animal supply chain are the ones that are condemned as being unfit for human consumption typically. So there are some disturbing rates of bacterial colonization and hazards in those fish as well. Pesticides are an issue. Antibiotics, hormonal growth promotants are an issue as well. The residues of these products that are found in commercial pet foods would have the potential, I think, to impact some of these animals. So there are a range of dietary hazards which are found in commercial meat-based pet foods. And studies have indicated that animals maintained on them over the long term have a range of adverse health consequences. So it makes sense logically that if you can supply a diet which is nutritionally complete and reasonably balanced but lacks all of the dietary additives, lacks all of the hazards, then your animal is likely to be healthier in the long term. And certainly the evidence indicates, the studies indicate that animals that are maintained on nutritionally sound vegan diets, that is cats and dogs, in the long term are perfectly healthy and seem to do very well.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And so in addition to having a good reason to feed the vegan foods to cats and dogs just for simply health and also compassion for the animals who are being mercilessly slaughtered by the billions, that brings me into climate change, and that's another good reason for not only humans to be adopting a vegan diet, but also for the companion animals. And so can you please tell us a little bit about climate change and the impact of animal agriculture on climate change?
I mean, sure. Climate change is one of the huge issues affecting animals, certainly because the animals are affected by climate change and also because they contribute to climate change in terms of the agricultural sector. So animals are affected by climate change. We're currently living through the sixth mass extinction event since fossil records began. That's an event where more than 50% of all species go extinct, and there have been five of them previously since fossil records began. This is the sixth one now. We have rates of extinction which are between 100 to 1,000 times at the background rate of extinction that would normally be expected over time. So animal species en masse are going extinct. That in itself is an enormous animal welfare concern, arguably the biggest one that there is. So they're affected by climate change. Climate change is very much part of the reason why this is happening, along with wholesale land clearing, degradation, pollution, overfishing, overhunting, the spread of urbanisation, and so on.
Thank you, Professor Knight. I'm really looking forward to our part two interview that we'll have in the near future, and when your fiancé, Yes Mine DeBow, will be joining us. And I'm really excited to hear about the reason why both of you are currently in Berlin, Germany.
Yes, we look forward to talking to you next time. Berlin's a great place to be. Yes Mine is working for ProVeg now, which is the leading edge of vegan advocacy in Europe at the moment. So she's the international director for ProVeg. ProVeg has grown from a group of 40 people about 2 years ago to have more than 120 staff today, and in half a dozen European countries, and spreading even further afield now. So an incredibly rapidly growing organization. They're based in Berlin, and she works for them, and I've come along to work remotely for the week and to speak to ProVeg about vegan companion animal diets as well.
That's wonderful. And in that conversation, when Yes Mine joins us, I'll be happy to hear about both of you as vegan runners.
Yes, yes indeed. We are vegan runners. The organization Vegan Runners is a few years old in the United Kingdom and has grown now to be, I think, the largest running club in the country, with about 2,400 runners up and down the country. And we've been keen vegan runners for many years. They've got their own special green and black kit, which is quite distinctive and is regularly seen on races across the country where vegan runners have entered. I have to keep running ever faster because Yes Mine is getting ever closer to my times and putting me under more and more pressure. She has a trophy, I'm afraid, at home from a race that we randomly entered walking through Regent's Park one day in London. We came across a 5 kilometre race, so we just decided to enter, and she won the women's and won a trophy, and it's been frustrating me for many years because I've been running for far longer than she has and I've never won a trophy. So I'm trying hard, but it's not too much avail because she keeps on getting quicker and quicker, unfortunately. Even though I'm getting quicker and quicker times, she's catching up.
Oh, that's great. Well, thank you very much, Professor Knight, for joining us on Vegan Nation. And what contact information can you leave with our listeners?
If people have questions about any of the topics that I've discussed, they can certainly check my website. So vegepets.info is one of them. And I have a website as well, andrewknight.info. I'm easy to find on the internet.
That's great. Thank you very much, and I look forward to our part two interview.
Thank you very much. I look forward to it.
That was Professor Andrew Knight from the University of Winchester in the United Kingdom. This is Marlene Arrow, host of Vegan Nation. I'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in.
I think, therefore I am a vegan. Well, peace begins in the kitchen.
Next week at this time, we will bring you more news on living a vegan lifestyle. Hear this program again at wcuw.org/vegannation. Theme music provided by Will Tuttle. This is Marlene Narrow, wishing you a good day.
Vegan Nation is sponsored in part by Sea Koi Beach Massage, advocating social justice for all living creatures. Massage on the beach, at your rental villa, or at the historic Club Comanche Hotel Sea Koi, because your tropical vacation should be filled with relaxation. Online at massagesinkroy.com.
Thanks again for tuning in to Vegan Nation. Let's go out with more tunes from Vegan Smythe in Australia.